This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, June 1999 examination, in English as a second language. Paper 4, Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you are all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. Friends arrive unexpectedly. Anna orders a family-sized pizza for supper by telephone. What sort of pizza should it be?
Surprise! Frank speaking. How can I help you?
Oh, I'd like to order a family-sized pizza. It must be suitable for vegetarians.
Certainly. It will be ready for collection in 10 minutes. Pizza surprise! Frank speaking. How can I help you?
Oh, I'd like to order a family-sized pizza. It must be suitable for vegetarians.
Certainly. It will be ready for collection in 10 minutes.
Question 2. Paul is told by his teacher that he hasn't been picked for the football team. Why is this?
I'm sorry, Paul, but you won't be in the team for Saturday's match. I don't feel that you are fit enough after your injury last week. I'm sorry, Paul, but you won't be in the team for Saturday's match. I don't feel that you are fit enough after your injury last week.
Question 3. Your English teacher will not be in school next week. Why is this? Who will be taking the classes instead?
The deputy headmaster will take your English classes next week, as I am going on a short course at the university. I will set your work this afternoon. The deputy headmaster will take your English classes next week, as I am going on a short course at the university. I will set your work this afternoon.
Question 4. Jane wants to take her friend swimming at their new leisure centre this evening. At what time can they swim, and how much will the entrance fee be?
Let's go swimming this evening. Here's the programme for the new pool. Oh dear, at 5 o'clock it's men only, followed by a private swimming club session. We can't go until 8:30 p.m.
Well, that suits me. How much will it cost?
£1.50 each. Let's Let's go swimming this evening. Here's the programme for the new pool. Oh, dear. At 5 o'clock, it's men only.
No.
Followed by a private swimming club session. We can't go until 8:30 p.m.
Well, that suits me. How much will it cost?
£1.50 each.
Question 5. John has asked for directions to the main railway station. Give 2 reasons why he should have no problem in finding it.
Excuse me, is this the main station?
Oh, no, this line is only for local services.
Oh.
If you go out into Church Street, you'll easily see the main line station because it is facing you at the end of the road.
Ah.
There are also big signs saying railway station outside it.
Thank you so much. I'll have to hurry.
Excuse me, is this the main station?
Oh, no, this line is only for local services.
Oh.
If you go out into Church Street, you'll easily see the main line station because it is facing you at the end of the road.
Ah.
There are also big signs saying railway station outside it.
Thank you so much. I'll have to hurry.
Question 6. You are going to spend a few days in France with your family. According to the weather forecast, it is going to rain. Name any 2 types of shower you might experience.
And that's the end of the news.
Listen, everyone, the weather forecast is just coming on.
Here is the weather forecast for France and southern Europe. Isolated showers on Monday, some becoming thundery. On Tuesday, drizzle moving into southern France and the central Mediterranean. Scattered showers in store for Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh.
And that's the end of the news.
Listen, everyone, the weather forecast is just coming on.
Here is the weather forecast for France and southern Europe. Isolated showers on Monday, some becoming thundery. On Tuesday, drizzle moving into southern France and the central Mediterranean. Scattered showers in store for Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh.
That is the last question in part 1. In a moment, you will hear part 2. Now, look at the questions for part 2, exercise 1. Part 2, exercise 1, question 7. Listen to the following interview with Sarah Carter at London Zoo. Then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Have you always wanted to work with animals? Well, Jan Miller went to meet 24-year-old Sarah Carter at London Zoo, where she is a zookeeper.
Hello, Sarah. It's good to meet you, here in the middle of your working day. Tell me, did you always want to work in a zoo?
Oh, yes. I used to come here very often when I was young, and then I asked about a summer holiday job, and got a temporary position, cleaning out enclosures and taking children for rides. At the end of that summer, a vacancy came up in the small mammals department. That was 7 years ago, in 1992, and I'm still here.
Did you have to go to college to become a zookeeper?
No, but I have taken correspondence courses to learn about diet and care of the animals. Then I picked up a lot of practical experience as a trainee keeper for 3 years.
Hmm. Tell us about a typical day.
Well, I start at 8 a.m, cleaning out the animal enclosures and feeding the animals. Each animal likes to eat different things, and we sometimes give them live meals,
for example, cricket.
Oh.
I work in the Moonlight World section, where there are bats, rats and other small animals. In the afternoon, I move animals and work on behaviour enrichment schemes.
You work on what?
It usually just involves thinking up ways to get the animals searching for food. They'd get lazy if it was just given to them. We aren't allowed to stroke the animals. They mustn't bond with us. But they do recognise us, of course. One of the otters sits up and whistles when I come in.
What do you enjoy most about your job?
Hand-rearing the animals. For example, when babies are rejected by their parents. But I love all of my job. I'm always thinking how lucky I am.
Are there any disadvantages to being a zookeeper?
Yes. It's very sad when an animal dies.
Ah. Could you be promoted further?
Yes. I'd like to become head keeper. Our current one has been here for 30 years. The top job in a zoo is curator, but that's an administrative post.
Hmm. Have you worked in any other zoos?
I spent 6 months in the National Zoo at Washington, D.C. in America, but I prefer London Zoo.
Do you get much time off?
Yeah, 23 days a year, but not specifically bank holidays. The animals still have to eat, even if the zoo is shut.
Do you earn much?
Well, I get £12,000 a year, but head keeper earns £18,000.
Hmm. Thank you very much, Sarah. Back to you, David, in the studio.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Have you always wanted to work with animals? Well, Jan Miller went to meet 24-year-old Sarah Carter at London Zoo, where she is a zookeeper.
Hello, Sarah. It's good to meet you here in the middle of your working day. Tell me, did you always want to work in a zoo?
Oh, yes. I used to come here very often when I was young. And then I asked about a summer holiday job and got a temporary position, cleaning out enclosures and taking children for rides. At the end of that summer, a vacancy came up in the small mammals department. That was 7 years ago, in 1992, and I'm still here.
Did you have to go to college to become a zookeeper?
No, but I have taken correspondence courses to learn about diet and care of the animals. Then I picked up a lot of practical experience as a trainee keeper for 3 years.
Hmm. Tell us about a typical day.
Well, I start at 8 a.m., cleaning out the animal enclosures and feeding the animals. Each animal likes to eat different things, and we sometimes give them live meals, for example, crickets.
Oh.
I work in the Moonlight World section, where there are bats, rats and other small animals. In the afternoon, I move animals and work on behaviour enrichment schemes.
You work on what?
It usually just involves thinking up ways to get the animals searching for food. They'd get lazy if it was just given to them. We aren't allowed to stroke the animals. They mustn't bond with us. But they do recognise us, of course. One of the otters sits up and whistles when I come in.
What do you enjoy most about your job?
Hand-rearing the animals. For example, when babies are rejected by their parents. But I love all of my job. I'm always thinking how lucky I am.
Are there any disadvantages to being a zookeeper?
Yes. It's very sad when an animal dies.
Ah. Could you be promoted further?
Yes. I'd like to become head keeper. Our current one has been here for 30 years. The top job in a zoo is curator, but that's an administrative post.
Hmm. Have you worked in any other zoos?
I spent 6 months in the National Zoo at Washington, D.C. in America, but I prefer London Zoo.
Do you get much time off?
Yeah, 23 days a year, but not specifically bank holidays. The animals still have to eat, even if the zoo is shut.
Do you earn much?
Well, I get £12,000 a year, but a head keeper earns £18,000.
Hmm. Thank you very much, Sarah. Back to you, David, in the studio.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two.
Exercise 2, questions 8 to 15. Listen to this radio interview with Lars Eriksson about the causes and effects of melting ice in the Antarctic. Then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Lars Eriksson is here in the studio and is going to tell us about the dramatic temperature changes that have been taking place in the Antarctic. Good evening, Lars.
Good evening.
Can you begin by telling us why the Antarctic is getting warmer?
You'd be surprised to know that the Antarctic is the size of Europe and America put together. Nearly all of it is covered by a thick ice cap, in some places very thick. During the past 50 years, the Antarctic Peninsula has warmed by 2.5 degrees Celsius, the fastest temperature rise in the world.
That's incredible.
Yes, isn't it? Some scientists think this temperature rise in the Antarctic Peninsula is part of the warming up of the whole planet and is due to the greenhouse effect. Others say the warming may be localized, which means it is only happening in the Antarctic Peninsula.
You mentioned the greenhouse effect. What is this exactly?
Gases in the air act like the glass of a greenhouse and keep the Earth at a certain temperature.
Mm.
Too much carbon dioxide, or greenhouse gas, in the atmosphere, half of which is caused by fuel being burnt, makes the world too hot.
I see. Thank you.
Mm.
Back to the Antarctic, then.
Uh-huh.
What is happening there now?
The animals and plants that live in the Antarctic have had to live in very cold conditions, and so the changes that a warmer Antarctic brings have a great effect on them. The worry now is that global warming is causing the Antarctic to melt, which could be disastrous. The Antarctic ice cap contains 90% of the world's fresh water. If it melted completely, it would raise the sea level and many areas of land would be flooded. Imagine that.
Yes, that certainly sounds worrying.
Mm.
Going on to another point, would you say that warmer temperatures affect all life in the Antarctic badly?
No. Rising temperatures which cause some ice to melt are good news for certain plants, because as ice melts, it exposes soil where plants can live.
Mm.
Some species of moss are showing signs of coming back after being buried in the ice for hundreds of years. The only flowering plants in the Antarctic are now on the increase. Their numbers have grown by 25% in some areas, which is amazing, isn't it?
It certainly is. Finally, Lars, what can be done about this problem of rising temperatures?
Well, governments have to agree to cut greenhouse gases by the end of the year. Action must be taken to stop cutting down forests and to burn less fossil fuel. This would certainly help to improve the situation.
Mm, I very much hope this will be done.
Mm.
Thank you very much, Lars Eriksson, for coming to talk to us on such an interesting and important subject.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Lars Eriksson is here in the studio and is going to tell us about the dramatic temperature changes that have been taking place in the Antarctic. Good evening, Lars.
Good evening.
Can you begin by telling us why the Antarctic is getting warmer?
You'd be surprised to know that the Antarctic is the size of Europe and America put together. Nearly all of it is covered by a thick ice cap, in some places very thick. During the past 50 years, the Antarctic Peninsula has warmed by 2.5 degrees Celsius, The fastest temperature rise in the world.
That's incredible.
Yes, isn't it? Some scientists think this temperature rise in the Antarctic Peninsula is part of the warming up of the whole planet and is due to the greenhouse effect. Others say the warming may be localized, which means it is only happening in the Antarctic Peninsula.
You mentioned the greenhouse effect. What is this exactly?
Gases in the air act like the glass of a greenhouse and keep the Earth at a certain temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Too much carbon dioxide, or greenhouse gas, in the atmosphere, half of which is caused by fuel being burnt, makes the world too hot.
I see. Thank you.
Mm.
Back to the Antarctic, then.
Uh-huh.
What is happening there now?
The animals and plants that live in the Antarctic have had to live in very cold conditions, and so the changes that a warmer Antarctic brings have a great effect on them. The worry now is that global warming is causing the Antarctic to melt, which could be disastrous. The Antarctic ice cap contains 90% of the world's fresh water. If it melted completely, it would raise the sea level and many areas of land would be flooded. Imagine that.
Yes, that certainly sounds worrying.
Mm.
Going on to another point, would you say that warmer temperatures affect all life in the Antarctic badly?
No. Rising temperatures which cause some ice to melt are good news for certain plants, because as ice melts, it exposes soil where plants can live.
Mm.
Some species of moss are showing signs of coming back after being buried in the ice for hundreds of years. The only flowering plants in the Antarctic are now on the increase. Their numbers have grown by 25% in some areas, which is amazing, isn't it?
It certainly is. Finally, Lars, what can be done about this problem of rising temperatures?
Well, governments have to agree to cut greenhouse gases by the end of the year. Action must be taken to stop cutting down forests and to burn less fossil fuel. This would certainly help to improve the situation.
Mm, I very much hope this will be done.
Mm.
Thank you very much, Lars Eriksson, for coming to talk to us on such an interesting and important subject.
Thank you for inviting me.
That is the end of part two. There will be a short break before you hear part three. In a moment, you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3, Exercise 1. Questions 16 to 21. Listen to the following radio interview about the problems which the year 2000 could cause. Then answer the questions below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good evening, and welcome to Computer Forum. The year 2000 is fast approaching, and millennium celebrations are planned around the world. Most of us are excited at the prospect. But for the computer industry globally, the year 2000 presents big problems. Helga Stutt, you're a systems analyst with IT International. Can you tell us exactly what the problem is with the year 2000?
Yes, good evening. It's very simple, really. Computer systems around the world, in banks, government departments, airlines, and stock exchanges, all face potential problems where they accept and process dates using only the last two digits of the year. So the year 1998 has been stored and processed as 1998. And 1999 is being stored and processed as 99. Using this system, the year 2000 will be stored and processed as the year 00. And it is possible that the computer systems will not be able to tell the difference between records created in the year 1900 and others in the year 2000.
Ooh. I'm beginning to see all sorts of problems linked with this.
Mm.
What are the implications, then?
Well, firstly, everyone thinks we don't need to worry until 2000 comes. But we do. A lot of financial forecasts are calculated in advance, so something needs to be done now.
Oh, dear. What does all this mean to us, then?
Well, gas, the electricity and the water companies, for example, might think that customer accounts are in arrears, that is, unpaid since 1900. Proceedings could be started to cut off supplies.
What else?
If you try to get money from a bank automatic cash machine, it's possible that the account will be marked invalid because the account was opened in 1900, before the bank existed, or because no payments have been received since 1900. Or you may go into a library and your books could register as 99 years overdue.
Oh. What is being done to address this problem?
Very little, I'm afraid. Of course, not every company will be badly affected, and most problems may be less serious than those described. However, it is incredible that many companies don't seem to understand how wide-ranging the problem is, and how little time there is left for them to do something about it.
Well, thank you very much, Helga Stutt, for that rather disturbing report, showing us that the lead-up to the 21st century is certainly not a smooth one.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good evening, and welcome to Computer Forum. The year 2000 is fast approaching, and millennium celebrations are planned around the world. Most of us are excited at the prospect. But for the computer industry globally, the year 2000 presents big problems. Helga Stutt, you're a systems analyst with IT International. Can you tell us exactly what the problem is with the year 2000?
Yes, good evening. It's very simple, really. Computer systems around the world, in banks, government departments, airlines, and stock exchanges, all face potential problems where they accept and process dates using only the last two digits of the year. So the year 1998 has been stored and processed as 98. And 1999 is being stored and processed as 99. Using this system, the year 2000 will be stored and processed as the year 00. And it is possible that the computer systems will not be able to tell the difference between records created in the year 1900 and others in the year 2000.
I'm beginning to see all sorts of problems linked with this.
Mm.
What are the implications, then?
Well, firstly, everyone thinks we don't need to worry until 2000 comes. But we do. A lot of financial forecasts are calculated in advance, so something needs to be done now.
Oh, dear. What does all this mean to us, then?
Well, gas, the electricity and the water companies, for example, might think that customer accounts are in arrears, that is, unpaid since 1900. Proceedings could be started to cut off supplies.
What else?
If you try to get money from a bank automatic cash machine, it's possible that the account will be marked invalid because the account was opened in 1900, before the bank existed, or because no payments have been received since 1900. Or you may go into the library, and your books could register as 99 years overdue.
Oh. What is being done to address this problem?
Very little, I'm afraid. Of course, not every company will be badly affected, and most problems may be less serious than those described. However, it is incredible that many companies don't seem to understand how wide-ranging the problem is, and how little time there is left for them to do something about it.
Well, thank you very much, Helga Stutt, for that rather disturbing report, showing us that the lead-up to the 21st century is certainly not a smooth one.
That is the end of Exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear Exercise 2. Now look at the questions for Exercise 2.
Exercise 2. Questions 22 to 27. Listen to the following interview about attractions in Florida, then answer the questions below. You will hear the discussion twice.
Hello. This is Michelle Surtees welcoming you to this evening's travel spot. Tonight, we are talking to David Charter about his recent excursion to Florida. David, good evening.
Good evening.
So, tell us where you went and what you saw.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, I wanted to experience Florida's nature reserves, which are world famous. And it has always seemed strange to me that nature and the NASA Space Center should coexist side by side. This area is called the Space Coast and is a mix of NASA and natural attractions. For example, giant turtles nest there from May to August. But Disneyland, Epcot, and MGM are only 45 minutes away.
I didn't realize that the area was so rich in natural attractions.
Oh, it certainly is. You can cruise along St. John's River and try to spot some of the region's 310 species of birds, such as a bald eagle, a black rail, or a yellow-breasted chat. At the same time, you might see a 6-foot alligator snapping its jaws as it swirls by.
Oh, how exciting! And did you go to the NASA Center?
Well, yes. It's right there. The John F. Kennedy Space Center. It's absolutely brilliant. It brings together all the elements of the American lunar program. One of the hangars has a 363-foot Saturn V rocket on display, which was saved when the project was cancelled after 17 of the planned 20 Apollo missions had taken place.
Is it hands-on? Something for everyone?
Oh, absolutely. You can count down to the launch of Apollo 8, the first U.S. manned space mission. As the countdown ends, the room shakes, and you experience the launch all around you on giant screens. Of course, NASA isn't just history. There are space shuttles taking off and landing, and also the Mars project is underway. It's very exciting. Youngsters can pay $150 for a week at a space camp here and undergo real astronaut training.
And Disneyland?
I had no time, but it's under an hour away, and you could easily visit all of these locations.
Well, David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hello. This is Michelle Surtees welcoming you to this evening's travel spot. Tonight, we are talking to David Charter about his recent excursion to Florida. David, good evening.
Good evening.
So, tell us where you went and what you saw.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, I wanted to experience Florida's nature reserves, which are world famous. And it has always seemed strange to me that nature and the NASA Space Center should coexist side by side. This area is called the Space Coast and is a mix of NASA and natural attractions. For example, giant turtles nest there from May to August, but Disneyland, Epcot, and MGM are only 45 minutes away.
I didn't realize that the area was so rich in natural attractions.
Oh, it certainly is. You can cruise along St. John's River and try to spot some of the region's 310 species of birds, such as a bald eagle, a black rail, or a yellow-breasted chat. At the same time, you might see a 6-foot alligator snapping its jaws as it swirls by.
Oh, how exciting! And did you go to the NASA Center?
Well, yes. It's right there. The John F. Kennedy Space Center. It's absolutely brilliant. It brings together all the elements of the American lunar program. One of the hangars has a 363-foot Saturn V rocket on display, which was saved when the project was cancelled after 17 of the planned 20 Apollo missions had taken place.
Is it hands-on? Something for everyone?
Oh, absolutely. You can count down to the launch of Apollo 8, the first U.S. manned space mission. As the countdown ends, the room shakes, and you experience the launch all around you on giant screens. Of course, NASA isn't just history. There are space shuttles taking off and landing, and also the Mars project is underway. It's very exciting. Youngsters can pay $150 for a week at a space camp here and undergo real astronaut training.
And Disneyland?
I had no time, but it's under an hour away, and you could easily visit all of these locations.
Well, David, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is the end of part three, and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, candidate number, and center number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected.